ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. టుడే వి ఆర్ రీడింగ్ ఫ్రమ్ శ్రీమద్ భాగవతం క్యాంటర్ 12 చాప్టర్ 12 టైటిల్ శ్రీమద్ భాగవతం సమ్మరైజ్డ్ verse number 53. Naishkarmyam apyachida bhava varjitam na shopade gyanam alam alam niranjanam kudah punashashvat abhadram ishware నహ్యర్పితం కర్మ యదప్యనుత్తమం. నైష్కర్మ్యం, సెల్ఫ్ రియలైజేషన్, బీయింగ్ ఫ్రీ ఫ్రమ్ ద రియాక్షన్స్ ఆఫ్ ఫ్రూటీ వర్క్. అపి ఆల్దో అచ్యుత ఆఫ్ ద ఇన్ఫాలిబుల్ లార్డ్ భావ కాన్సెప్షన్ వర్జితం devoid of na does not shobhate look well gyanam transcendental knowledge alam actually niranjanam free from designations kutaha where is punaha again shashvat always abhadram uncongenial ishware unto the lord na not he indeed arpitam offered karma fruity work yet which is api even anuttamam unsurpassed. Translation: knowledge of self realization, even though free from all material affinity, does not look well if devoid of a conception of the infallible God. What then is the use of even the most properly performed fruitive activities, which are naturally painful from very beginning and transient by nature, if they are not utilized for the devotional service of the Lord? So here is the purport by servants of Srila Prabhupada. It is just one, two lines. This and the previous two verses are found in a slightly different form in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.10-12. The translations are based on Srila Prabhupada's. So here the translation given is from Srila Prabhupada's translation from the first canto of 5th chapter, verse number 12. So the 5th chapter of 1st canto is titled Narada's Instructions on Srimad Bhagavatam. And if you compare these two verses, the only difference is the last word. Here it is in the verse 53 of the 12th chapter of 12th canto is the last two verses are api anuttamam. And here the last word is yadapyakaranam. So there is not much of a difference. So the translation is the same in both. So I'll read the purport from first canto, since we don't have a purport in here. So this is Srila Prabhupada's purport to canto 1, chapter 5, verse number 12. As referred to above, not only ordinary literature devoid of the transcendental glorification of the Lord are condemned, but also Vedic literatures and speculations on the subject of impersonal Brahman when they are devoid of devotional service. When speculation on the impersonal Brahman is condemned on the above ground, then what to speak of ordinary fruity work which is not meant to fulfill the aim of devotional service? Such speculative knowledge and fruity work cannot lead one to the goal of perfection. Fruity work, in which almost all people in general are engaged, is always painful either in the beginning or at the end. It can be fruitful only when made subservient to the devotional service of the Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita also it is confirmed that the results of such fruitive work may be offered for the service of the Lord. Otherwise it leads to material bondage. The bona fide enjoyer of the fruitive work is the personality of Godhead. And thus, when it is engaged for the sense gratification of the living beings, it becomes an acute source of trouble.
ओम ज्ञानतिम्रांतस्य ज्ञानांजनशलाखया चक्षुर्मिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं वन्देहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुता पदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणा रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादान् सहगणा ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधो दीनबंधो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कांता राधा कांता नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वंशकल्पतरूभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
हरे कृष्ण. So here is a very wonderful verse which is repeated in 12th canto, which is originally stated in 1st canto, 5th chapter. So that itself shows the relevance of this verse. And here Srila Sudha Goswami has spoken the same verse in 1st canto. So the speaker of the verse is the same because it is spoken by Sudha Goswami in the 1st canto, and now Sudha Goswami himself speaks in the 12th canto. So this is not a verse which is spoken by Srila Shukadeva Goswami, rather it is spoken by Sudha Goswami. Now in this verse, first point that I would like to discuss is it is mentioned that what then is the use of fruitive activities which are naturally painful from the very beginning and transient by nature. So, primarily in this verse, two subject matters are discussed. One is the impersonal knowledge, which is knowledge of self-realization, which is devoid of the conception of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the other one is the material enjoyment, the fruitive activities, even though performed very perfectly. So, first point that we are going to cover, as it is mentioned here, is that the result of fruitive activities or the fruitive activity in itself is painful right from the beginning. So let's try to understand how it is painful right from the beginning. So when we talk about pain or pleasure, we have to understand it has to deal with the mind. So when it is mentioned here that the experience of pain starts at the beginning means we are experiencing pain from the beginning of a fruitive activity. Now, if we try to see how the mind functions, we have different senses, and these senses are giving so many kind of stimuli to the mind. So it can be heat, it can be cold, it can be beautiful scenes for the eyes, it can be nice voice or familiar voice, it can be nice fragrance, it can be foul smell. So all these inputs are coming through different sense organs and it is deposited in the mind. So in other words, the mind is acted or it is stressed by different kinds of stimuli from different sense organs. And now, the experiencer, the spirit soul, he actually identifies with certain stimuli as happiness and certain stimuli as distress. So for instance, in a cold day, if it is very chilly, and if we have a nice heater on, then we feel, okay, it is very nice. But the same heating on a hot day, it becomes painful. So according to the sense perception, whatever is coming to the mind, the spirit soul, when it is conditioned, when it is affected by the false ego, thinks it as happiness or distress. The same thing applies to if we hear voice of a familiar person, our friend, oh yeah, we like it, okay, that person I know. And if we hear a voice of someone who we don't like, then the same thing becomes something which is, you know, painful, or oh yeah, I don't want to hear that, oh, he's again here. So this kind of feeling comes to our mind based on our identification with the mind. For the pure spirit soul, under the influence of the false ego, when identify with the mind, then these kind of things come. So we have these two kinds of stimuli, that is the happiness stimuli and the distress stimuli. So whatever comes to the mind can be classified into these two categories. And Shastra says, even right from the beginning, it is painful. Or both the happiness stimuli as well as the distress stimuli, both are painful. It's not that it is considered one is, okay, really it is happy and another is distressful. No, both are considered distress. The reason is, both are distracting us from our eternal relationship with Krishna. So both are causing forgetfulness of Krishna. So if you see the natural state of the spirit soul is anandamayo bhyasat, because the spirit soul is connected to the Supreme Spirit Soul, Krishna, the Supreme Lord. So he is engaged in the devotional service, so he is always in happiness. So whenever identifies with the material body, when these kinds of stimuli come to the mind, since he identified with those, then he considered it as happy or distress, but both are actually distressful. Srila Prabhupada gives a famous example of a salt mine. In a salt mine, whatever you pick from the salt mine, it is salty. It's not that, okay, something if made of salt is going to be sweet. No, it's all going to be salty. In the same way, in the material world, whatever stimulus comes to our mind, they are all causing distress. And here, in this verse, there is a very interesting point that is mentioned, that is right from the beginning. Then the question arises, how are we experiencing pain, or how it is painful right from the beginning of a fruitive activity? Not that one has to wait till the end of the fruitive activity where one has to get the result, but right from the planning, right from thinking about it, the stress, the distress starts. So, if we try to understand this point, we have to understand, if we pick any fruitive activity, fruitive by default means fruits. There is some motivation of fruits or motivation of results. So, any fruitive activity, when we try to think about it, means the mind has some idea about its results, or mind has some motivation behind that. It is not devoid of motivation. It has a strong material motivation. The degree of the motivation can vary, the purpose can vary, still there is motivation for something. And whenever there is that motivation, it is actually causing a stress to the mind, because it is actually deviating us from our eternal relationship from Krishna. And even though one is actually forgetful completely about Krishna, still whenever there is a material desire comes in the heart, that in itself is stressful. No matter whether it's happiness or distress. Both has pressure. It is just like carrying some weight. If we carry some weight, no matter what kind of weight it is, we have to actually carry it. We have to, you know, if it goes, the weight is going high, say 10 kgs, 20 kgs, 30 kgs, we have to actually carry it. And the pressure is coming to our body. In the same way, when we have any kind of stress, any kind of stimuli coming through the senses to the mind, no matter what, whether it is happiness stimuli or distress stimuli, the mind has to carry it. And that is causing us pain. So there is no option out. That is saying, okay, material happiness, okay, that is actually enjoyable for the spirit soul. No. Material distress is enjoyable for the spirit soul. No. So because this is completely acting on a different platform altogether. one example I was thinking, a graduate student who is actually beginning his work, you know, initially there are a lot of expectations, his own expectations, expectations from the employer, expectations from the friends, from the society. So he is actually carrying so much of load in the mental platform, which is not easy to deal with. And that causes the pain. It's no matter what, you know, what kind of stressful job it is in due course of time, or what kind of pay is he going to get, what is the fruit of that work, no matter what, still, even from the right from the beginning, because of these expectations, which has to be there anyway, one has to actually suffer, one has to carry that load. There is no option out. One time I overheard a conversation. It was very interesting. It made me think, you know, it was many years back, still it made me really think. It was during the IT boom time. So, you know, few people were there, they were working in the IT industry. It was at least 8 or 9 years back. And there were, one person was telling, yeah, I joined this company, and now at least I can, you know, in this many months or in 1 or 2 years, I can become the team leader. And few more years, I can become the project leader. Then project manager. He was giving the whole idea and he was just, you know, so happy. Yes, I can become, you know, he was eating and, you know, few people were there. I was in the next table and, yes, I'll become this. I'll become the other thing, you know, because I have this opportunity. I have that opportunity. I have this skills, that skills. So he was just going on all these kind of things. And the people around him, they were encouraging, yes, yes, you will do this, yes, we think so. This is, you know, right from the beginning, it is actually stress. It is just pain. There is no happiness whatsoever. Even though he thinks he can get happiness of the whole experience, but right from the beginning, mind is actually agitated from the normal position. Even if one considers just a peaceful position, even from there it is agitated, it is moved away. Then what to speak about our normal, dormant Krishna conscious position, where one is eternally serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead in full happiness and bliss. Such a distraction. Similarly, even Prahlad Maharaj mentions, the pain starts right from the planning. When we plan something, a fruitive activity, anything, any material activity, right from the planning there is pain. Right from the planning. I remember, again, another story, a few of our relatives in fact, you know, planning so much of, you know, huge planning to build a house, including the whole details, you know, the floor, the house, number of houses, and they were designing and redesigning the whole thing. It just keep going like anything. You know, first they will have, you know, the kitchen here, this here, that here, and they will draw the whole thing, their idea about their house. Then again they redesign, and again go on. And I have met them after a few years. They had their dream house, you know, with many bedrooms, you know, very expensive flooring, you know, expensive, everything, fitting, curtain, everything very expensive. I went and I saw them, you know, actually there is not even a tinge of happiness. Pretty much painful. Because one has to pay off everything. So in due course of time, it is revealed how much painful it is to pay off whatever luxury one has to actually, you know, one has to get all this luxury and they had to pay off for everything. So in 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, in the 14th verse, 15th verse, Prabhupada calls people who are actually just working too hard as mudhas, as fools. The reason is they can hardly enjoy the result of their work. Even though they are working very hard, hardly can they enjoy. As Srila Prabhupada asks, okay, you are so advanced, but there is not even time to eat peacefully and eat 2 chapatis. You are driving and eating something. So, what is the concept of advancement? One is working very hard and there is not even time to enjoy the result of work. Shrama eva hi kevalam. Yes, it is shrama eva hi kevalam. That is useless waste of time. Even I used to think, even before coming in touch with the devotees, I think, okay, I can gain so much of material knowledge and that can give me satisfaction and happiness and that can make me very, you know, intelligent, it can make me thinking, all these kind of things. But You know, when he came with the devotees, he understand that is actually useless waste of time. That is, it's not real knowledge. It is again another form of ignorance because it is separated from Krishna. In Nectar of Devotion, Srila Prabhupada gives this example of suffering. There is a whole cycle of suffering, as we can say. The suffering cycle is given. You know, how it is starting from the avidya to the seed of suffering, to the sinful activity itself, the manifested and the unmanifested reactions, the proclivity, etc. So, Nectar of Devotion gives the whole cycle of suffering, how from subtle to gross, how the suffering is taking forth. So, in which Srila Prabhupada calls the bijam or the seed of suffering as the effect which is almost mature. It's a very interesting statement, as Prabhupada points out, the effect which is almost mature. So even at the point when there is a material desire, so here we are talking about the fruitive activity, so a desire for a fruitive activity, whenever it actually manifests, sprouts in the mind, that itself is almost mature of suffering. That is almost mature suffering. So that is bijam. Then it's just a matter of time to manifest on a gross platform or to manifest completely even in the mental platform. So the suffering is already there and one has to suffer right from that spot. So that is here it is mentioned as right from the beginning. So we had to understand, okay, it is, you know, it is painful from the beginning. And as devotees, we have to be very careful because we have this knowledge. That is, okay, if you make material plans, it can cause suffering. So we have to be careful not to make such plans. It doesn't mean one doesn't have to live in this material world. But one has to be very careful to mix all these plans for material enjoyment along with our devotional service. Because this mentality can come anytime. Because we are constantly associating with the material nature and we are not pure devotees. We are already affected by the three modes of material nature and we are just sadhakas, we are just trying to practice Krishna consciousness. So this mentality can creep in at any point of time. So we have to check our motivation behind our activities. No matter it is our devotional activities, maybe we are performing 9 processes of devotional service, or one may be working or studying, still we have to check our motivation behind our activities. So otherwise, if we are not actually introspective regarding this, in due course of time we can find we have a, you know, something has actually come about in our mind and we are performing a lot of activities which are not necessary or not with the right motivation. So we can actually be deviated from the process of devotional service. And initially, if you think about moving straight, and if you make a slight angle to that, in due course of time, that the distance between the real devotional service and where we are, it becomes a gap becomes too much. Because initially it starts from a slight angle, then as the time progresses, the deviation becomes greater and greater. So one has to check. So even devotees, if they are working outside, if they are not actually living in the ashram, even for them it is so important to take guidance from senior devotees or spiritual master while making even a material decision which can affect one's spiritual life. If one thinks, this is my material, you know, this is my, something regarding my job or it's something regarding my study, still one is not careful if it can actually create some trouble for our spiritual life, one has to be very careful while making any decision regarding that. One has to consult a senior devotee who can foresee what's going to happen if we make such a decision. So one has to be very careful making any decision. And for full-time devotees, for sure, one has to be, constantly we are under the shelter of other devotees. And we have to understand that is the blessing of Krishna and Srila Prabhupada. We shouldn't think it is just somebody is micromanaging our life or time or etc. Or somebody is looking what we are doing all the time. Rather, that is the shelter. The shelter means it is there all the time. Real shelter means it is there all the time. Like if we have an umbrella in rain, it is there all the time. Otherwise, we get wet. In the same way, the shelter of devotees, we have to be accessible to the shelter of the devotees all the time. Otherwise, it is very dangerous in this world. So when we try to see why such a danger is there, okay, we are affected by the three modes of material nature, means our mind, our senses, all are affected by the material nature. And there is a two-way connection between the mind and the senses. As Bhagavad Gita, even in the second chapter, Krishna makes it very clear. He says, Yatatopi hai kaunteya purushasya vipaschidaha indriyani pramadhini haranti prasabham mana. So, Krishna is talking about a devotee actually. About a person who is actually trying to practice Krishna consciousness. Yatatopi hi kaunteya. Yatato means one who is actually endeavoring for Krishna consciousness. Not yet perfect, but he is actually practicing Krishna consciousness, just like us. Purushasya vipaschitaha. Vipaschitaha means one who can actually do discriminate between what is right and what is wrong based on knowledge. So a devotee who has knowledge and he is trying to practice Krishna consciousness, still Krishna says, Indriyani pramadhini. The senses are strong, so strong that it can forcibly take away the mind. It can actually forcibly take away the mind from Krishna consciousness to some sense gratification. So Krishna makes this point in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Because second chapter is the summary of Bhagavad Gita. So we have to understand this very clearly. Even though we are practicing devotees, senses are so strong that mind can be deviated from Krishna consciousness to something else because of the strength of the senses. Because we don't have the purified senses. We are trying to purify the senses. This is the mind, how the senses are taking away the mind from Krishna to something else. This is in one direction. And on the other direction, again it is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, Dhyayato Vishyam Pumsam Sangasteshu Abhijayate Sangas Sanjayate Kamam Kama Lopha Abhijayate Lophad Bhavati Samoho Samohat Smriti Vibhrama Smriti Vibhrama Buddhinasho Buddhinashat Pranashyati. So there again this verse is telling, okay, it is right starting from the contemplation of the sense objects. Then from there, how ultimately the intelligence is lost and the senses are going wild. So one is thinking about the sense object, this is happening within the mind and it has an effect on the senses ultimately. And it can deviate us from Krishna consciousness. And similarly, the second chapter verse is saying, okay, the senses can forcibly take away the mind from Krishna consciousness to something else. So here we can see the two-way connection between the senses and the mind. So senses can take away the mind away from Krishna, also the mind can take away the senses from Krishna by thinking about the object of sense gratification. So this connection, this is running all the time. So we have to be very, very careful while practicing Krishna consciousness, and we have to be contemplative. What we are doing, are we under the shelter of devotees? Are we taking right decisions? We have to be very careful. Two things are very important in Kali Yuga all the time. Kali Yuga, of course, Namakirtan is very important. We have to chant Hare Krishna Mahamantra very, very attentively all the time while we are chanting our japa, or while we are chanting in congregation, or we are singing all the time. We have to be very careful about the Harinam. That is one thing. Then we have to be careful that we are making the right decisions in our life. Because if you see life has a series of decisions. And we have to make sure we are making the right decisions. Then we need to have the understanding of Shastra. We need the mercy of the Lord as well as the devotees. So if we are confused, we have to approach devotees and ask, what is best for me? So we can get a higher perspective on the situation where we are in. So then in that way, if we engage ourselves in devotional service, then we are protected. So in the next verse, Krishna says, you know, where it is mentioned that the senses can take away the mind, he says, Tani sarvani samyamya yukta asina matparaha vashehi indriya tasya prajna pradishthita. So he says, now control the senses and engage in devotional service. Only once it is fully engaged, then one can fully control the mind. And then one is safe. There he gives the example of Ambarish Maharaj, because he engaged all the senses in service of Krishna, as well as the mind. And in that example, there is a very interesting point, because the verse starts from Savai Manah Krishna Padaravindayo Vachamsi Vaikuntha Gunanu Varnane. It's very famous, you know, how he engaged his mind in thinking about the lotus feet of Krishna, how he engaged his hands in cleaning the temple, how he used his nostrils in smelling the tulsi leaves which are offered to the lotus feet of Krishna, etc. And at the end of those three verses, the last verse, it is mentioned that kamam cha dasye natu kama kamyaya. So that is actually the crux of the whole instruction. That is, ultimately what he did was kamam cha dasye. He used his desires to serve Krishna, to be subservient to Krishna, not to kama kamye, not to fulfill the desires of the mind. So this is the crux of that verse. And through that he actually engaged all his senses in service of Krishna as well as the mind. So a devotee is intelligent because he can actually engage all his senses in service of Krishna. So usually in a material sense we understand intelligence or a best businessman is one who can actually buy goods for at the least price, at the minimum price, and sell it for the maximum price. Then he is considered very intelligent. So in other words, maximize the profit. If somebody has something, then how to sell it for the highest possible price and one get, you know, a lot of profit. That is considered really good. And as far as devotees is concerned, devotees are actually more intelligent than such a businessman. The reason is, actually if we consider what a person, a human being, if what we have this material body and the material mind, right? Both are material in one sense. Both are made of three modes of material nature. So both are material. But at the same time, there is a big advantage. Because even though at the end of the life, this body is going to, it can be either burnt or it can be, you know, buried, you know, something will happen. It will actually disintegrate. And what is its value? Actually, it has no value. It is temporary, as it is mentioned in this verse. It is transient, as well as, you know, hardly it has any value. But the devotees are so intelligent that they can use this temporary body and they can get something which is eternal, which is the most precious. So for a materialistic person, they can use this temporary things like money, profit, etc. and they can get more profit. The first one, the initial whatever commodity they have, that is material. And when they sell, whatever profit they get, that is also material. Both are temporary. But devotee's intelligence, Krishna says, is that he uses the temporary to get the eternal. So there is a nice verse stating this in Srimad Bhagavatam in the 11th canto. It is said, Esha Buddhimadam Buddha Manishi cha manishina yas satyam anirte neha marte napnoti mamrutam. So here Krishna says, the process is the supreme intelligence of the intelligent and the cleverness of the most clever, for by following it one can in this very life make use of the temporary and unreal to achieve me, the eternal reality. So we see, one can get Krishna who is beyond any modes of material nature, and no one can actually ascertain the value of the Supreme Lord. So just using the temporary body, one can actually get Krishna. So this is the intelligence. So Krishna considers this as the real intelligence. Esha Buddhimatam Buddha. This is the intelligence of the intelligent. This is the supreme intelligence. So devotees have access to this intelligence. That is, we can actually engage our senses and we can actually go back home, back to Godhead, and we can actually get association of the Supreme Lord and we can serve Krishna eternally. This is the position. So Prabhupada states at one point that usually when we speak about the Supreme Lord, the usual verse in a Prabhupada Dorsa course is Nityo Nityanam Chetanas Chetananam Eko Bahunam Yo Vidadhati Kaman. That is, the Supreme Lord is the one who actually maintains, who takes care of everyone. He provides everything for everyone. So Prabhupada says, okay, this is the preliminary understanding of God. But the real love of the residents of spiritual world, like Mother Yashoda, is that if I don't feed Krishna, then Krishna will die. Or if I don't serve God, then God will die. So he says, Prabhupada says, okay, this is the real love. When one comes to the pure love, it is exactly the opposite. Where one sees God as the order supplier, and where the devotee is seeing, if we don't serve the Supreme Lord, the Lord is going to have problem. So he says, okay, this is real love. So the devotee has access to that. Now, as the second point mentioned here is, the knowledge of self-realization, even though it is without any tinge of material affinity, if it is devoid of Supreme Personality of Godhead, then it is useless. So here we can say, in this world, there are many people are propagating knowledge about self-realization or so-called self-realization, and people are attracted to the knowledge of self-realization. Mayavad is there, different kinds of Buddhist philosophy, many things are there, and they are very popular. So we can think why it is so popular. It is popular because there is no mention about surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There is no mention of following the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ultimately they say, okay, one becomes devoid of a body, one becomes null, or one becomes God himself. So follow these austerities, even though these things are austerities, still follow this because you can be the Supreme Lord, or one can become nothing. So there is no question of surrender, and there is no information that one is infinitely small, part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. So since the knowledge is devoid of that, then okay, it is popular. People are ready to follow these kind of things. So ultimately we can say, okay, this is because of envy of the Supreme Lord. And as Bhaktisiddhanta Sahasrara Thakur gives the example of a bottle of honey and the bee, Prabhupada also gives the same example. We cannot taste the honey by licking the bottle of the honey. One has to actually taste it. In the same way, the impersonalists, they don't have access to the real taste of Krishna consciousness because they don't have any personal conception of the Supreme Lord, nor do they are ready to surrender to the will of the Supreme Lord. So they don't have any access to the taste. They don't have a higher taste. Prabhupada says, initially they try to achieve Brahman and they do perform austerities, but since they become frustrated, they even try to read Srimad Bhagavatam and try to understand and speculate. But since they are devoid of knowledge that we are servant of Krishna, they cannot derive any benefit. They cannot understand, they cannot relish Srimad Bhagavatam. And they do give misinterpretation to key verses also. Some people is mentioned, Brahmedi Paramatmedi Bhagavan iti Shabdate, Vadandi Tattavidastattam Yajnana Madhavim Brahmedi Paramatmedi Bhagavan iti Shabdate. So it is mentioned, okay, which are the three kinds of realization, starting beginning from Brahman to Paramatma and till Bhagavan. But Mayavadis, when they read Srimad Bhagavatam, they say it is opposite. First is Brahman, because it is mentioned here, first is Brahman. So Brahman is first, then Paramatma, and lowest is Bhagavan. This is the way Mayavadis, they interpret even Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Prabhupada mentioned, even Shankaracharya, who was the founder of Mayavadis, he even didn't touch Srimad Bhagavatam. He never wrote commentary to Srimad Bhagavatam. However, his followers, they dare to touch Srimad Bhagavatam and misinterpret even the key verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. So here, we can say, in this verse, Naishkaramyam api achyuta bhava varjitam. This actually denies completely the misconception of Mayavad. Because Naishkarmyam, it is referring to Naishkarmyam is knowledge of self-realization. Because Naishkarmyam, there is no tinge of fruitive activity. So this is knowledge of self-realization without tinge of material affinity. So even though there is knowledge about the self without tinge of material affinity, if it is devoid of achyuta bhava varjitam. Varjitam means giving up completely, without. We know rasavarjam rasopyasya param dushta anivartate. Rasavarjam means without taste. So here, achyuta bhava varjitam, without Krishna consciousness. Achyuta is the infallible Lord Krishna. So if it is devoid of Krishna consciousness, then it is not going to work. It has of little value, no value at all. So by seeing this verse two times in Srimad Bhagavatam, we can, it makes it very, very clear that what is the objective of Srimad Bhagavatam. It is to give Krishna consciousness, achyuta bhava, Krishna bhava, Krishna bhavana. It is to give the real knowledge about Krishna. So one cannot actually, take out this from Srimad Bhagavatam, because it is mentioned two times. And these philosophers, or the so-called philosophers, they say that we don't care about Krishna, but the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita is great. There are great philosophers. They say, okay, Bhagavad Gita philosophy is really nice, but we don't need Krishna. There are essays, there are big books, in which even in the first page, in fact, my dad gave me one book. He asked me, okay, I became a devotee, so he said, you must read this to devote, you know, to get out of your misconceptions. So this was Essays on Gita by a very well-known, famous philosopher from India. And even in the first page, his conclusion is, no matter whether Krishna existed, whether he appeared in this world or he didn't appear in this world, but Bhagavad Gita philosophy is great. So this is Bhagavad Gita without Krishna. So what's the use of such kind of philosophy? Such a person, how can he preach surrender unto the lotus feet of Krishna? He himself is not convinced of the existence of Krishna, and how can he preach and convince others? It's not there. He's telling, okay, use this philosophy for whatever material gain you want. I read the first page and that's about it. And I couldn't read any further. So Srila Prabhupada used to criticize Dr. Radhakrishnan very heavily for this regard. Because when Srila Prabhupada went to America, the only translation of Bhagavad Gita what he had was Radhakrishnan's. And Prabhupada used to read this translation, but not the purport. So he just used to read the translation and he used to give his own purport. So that was the way Prabhupada used to use Dr. Radhakrishnan's Bhagavad Gita. But wherever Radhakrishnan presented impersonal philosophy, Prabhupada used to be very heavy. As you know, it says in the Sarvadharma and Paritya Mamekam Saranam Raja, the Radhakrishnan says that one should Krishna never ask to surrender to him, rather he says to ask to surrender unto the impersonal within him. So Prabhupada says, he is such a fool that he does not know the Supreme Lord is Advayam, non-dual. That is, there is no difference between his body and the soul. It's all spiritual. And he does not know this, and he has given a commentary on Bhagavad Gita. So what's the use of such a commentary? It is useless. And when Dr. Radhakrishnan was about to die, Srila Prabhupada visited Radhakrishnan in Chennai. So Radhakrishnan was on his deathbed. And he was a former Indian president, right? He was a former Indian president and he was on his deathbed. And that time, Prabhupada visited Chennai and he approached Radhakrishnan. He just saw him. But he couldn't respond, or I don't think whether Radhakrishnan could identify. I don't think any conversation, nothing happened, because he was completely paralyzed and he was kind of a comatose position. For some time he was in that position. And Srila Prabhupada mentioned to his servant in a very painful way, in a very compassionate way, that look at the end of a person who has tried to kill Krishna, who has actually tried to kill the personality of Krishna. He is living in one sense, but at the same time he is not living. He is just, you know, coma. He is in coma, just lying paralyzed completely. He can't speak, he can't move, nothing. The Prabhupada was compassionate. He was not telling in a very harsh way. He was very compassionate, but he was mentioning, look, what is the condition, what punishment he has got for, you know, denying and propagating this nonsense message about Krishna. So this is the second point that I want to convey in this verse. So the first point is, the fruitive activity right from the beginning is painful. Right from the planning, right from the thinking, it is giving us pain. And second is, the knowledge, even about the self, without knowledge about Krishna, has a little value. Because there is no shelter from Krishna. And without shelter of the Krishna, one cannot go back home, back to Godhead. So I would like to stop here and see if there are any comments or questions or corrections. Yes.
Was that activity was painful in his mind?
No, fruitive activity means activities which are devoid of Krishna consciousness. So, fruitive activity means any activity where there is no understanding about Krishna. So, if we are serving Krishna, that is not fruitive activity. So, whatever activity is happening in this temple, that is centered towards Krishna. So, that is not considered fruitive. Fruitive means if we are trying to get the fruits of that action for ourselves, or you know, whoever is extended to our body or mind or whatever in that way.
Okay.
Say, for instance, if you go outside and if you see people are working very hard, why do they work? They work because they want a nice life. They don't have any understanding about God. And they are not bothered about that. So that is fruitive activity. The same activity, fixing a mic, if somebody is doing outside the temple, in other words, it's not for glorification of the Supreme Lord, then the same activity can be classified as fruitive. But since it is in service of Krishna, it is for eternal benefit. Any small activity in service of Krishna is of eternal benefit. We can forget whatever service we have done for Krishna, but Krishna never forgets whatever service his devotees have done for him. That is the position of Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada gives the example, if one actually hit the head of a nail with a hammer, even just that service Krishna never forgets eternally. So can you think about the gratitude of the Supreme Person? He is supremely grateful. Yes, Prabhu.
Yeah. And from the presumably matter of tama before the karma production protocols. So in relation to the creation of thought and turning that into an action, at what point do we develop a karma reaction?
Okay. Point number one. Okay, I mentioned that when there is a sinful or a fruitive desire within the heart, in the state of bijam or in the result, the effect which is almost mature, when the karmic reaction starts, in which stage, when it is present as a desire or a thought within the mind, and it can, consequently it can actually develop into action, so at which stage the karmic reaction starts? The point is, even if we have a fruitive thought, there is a karmic reaction in itself, there itself, because one is actually, the mind is agitated. So we can see, even these are all karmic cycle, there is a karmic reaction in that sense. But at the same, that is very subtle. But when we have a thought, and when it, we can actually fructify further, because a thought is thinking, feeling and willing. So any thought can actually develop in these three phases. First is thinking about it, then we are feeling about it. That if you want to eat something, we can first think about it. One can develop a feel of it. Say, gulab jamun, yeah, it's nice. You know, we get a feel of it. Okay, how will it be if I experience, if I actually eat it, how will it be? Or if I experience such kind of a sense pleasure, how will it be? One actually tries to feel within the mind. So that is the next stage. Feeling. The feeling means we are actually experiencing within the mind. Subtly we are experiencing. And that can actually further develop into willing, that I need it. So when we come to the stage of I need it, I will it, then one tries to take the help of the intelligence to actually get it done. So then it comes to as a, comes about as a gross action. So then one gets a gross result. So that is from subtle to gross, that development of that desire can take place. However, if somebody is in knowledge or somebody develops some knowledge in between, then one can actually stop that. Even devotees, some desire can come to the heart. That's okay, with the knowledge we can actually cut it. We can burn it. You know, jnanagni dagdha karmani. One can actually burn with the transfer the knowledge, and since we are engaged in the devotional service, it will burn.
So, our thoughts only have a very subtle reaction.
Okay, again, that kind of reaction, what I mean is, it's within the mind. So generally, because if we are thinking about some sense gratification within our mind, the mind is already disturbed. You know, we don't have to wait for anything, mind is already disturbed. But there is no karmic reaction since we thought about a sense gratification in this age of Kali. Say, for instance, one is thinking about intoxication. So since one thought about intoxication, there is no punishment for doing into, you know, drinking. One is not getting reaction for that because one thought about it. No, that is not there. But since any thoughts which is, you know, devoid of Krishna consciousness, that in itself is painful. Because it's actually trying to deviate more from our Krishna consciousness. We may not feel it as painful, we may enjoy it, but from the spiritual perspective, that in itself is a deviation. So in Kali Yuga, because in previous Yugas, the thoughts were considered very powerful. Because if somebody cursed, it used to take place. Whatever words comes out, that used to have effect straight away. But because the actions, mind and words were quite pure. But now, since these things are not pure, our thoughts, there is no reaction to our thoughts as such.
It reflects your environment. If you're in a good mood, it reflects your environment. I'm not sure exactly where to draw the line. I'm not 100% sure where to draw the line on the effect that my thoughts have.
As a devotee, in the beginning of devotional service, because we were associating with the modes, we are completely with the, you know, in the material life for such a long time and many births. So thoughts can come. That's okay. The line is, whenever we understand this thought is not good for me, it's something which is quite negative for my Krishna consciousness, then try to cut it as soon as possible. That is the drawing point. That is the line. We shouldn't try to think about it and try to meditate on it and try to enjoy or, you know, be quite obsessed in that kind of thought. One shouldn't try to do that. One should try to cut it. That's the way we can help ourselves. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki.